radio, the medium of choice for generations. Radio personalities were seen as superstars, opening shopping malls, appearing on TV shows, and exciting local fans by turning up to fetes and festivals. Nowadays, radio sounds a little bit different. Everything's just much slicker and more professional. Gone are the varied playlists. In are focused music policies, only playing one type of genre. Gone are the self-indulgent personalities. And in are big names and big influencers with big social media followings. Gone are the fake laughing local DJs. And in are more music and big celebrity national breakfast shows. One person who's not only survived both eras, but is actually thriving, is my good friend who still has a show on a national radio station. It's time to talk to Sarah Champion of Absolute Radio and say to her, let's take a look in your mirror.
In Your Mirror with Neil Velio.
The idea of this show is that you'll hear how successful people of today and the future have been overcoming their demons to win big in life. We'll learn all about how they've looked in their mirror and then looked back at their past life through it. My hope is that you listen to these stories and then you feel inspired to find a way to also look back at your past life in your mirror. Sarah Champion is a familiar voice on Absolute Radio. Not only is she the main star of the brand's festival coverage.
So that's it. Isle of Wight 2013. Thank you so much for joining us from around the world tonight and across the weekend.
And if you've just switched us on, this is what you missed.
Absolute Radio Live.
The Isle of Wight Festival 2013, only on Absolute Radio.
We'll take you there.
But she's a hit with her adoring listeners to her daily show on Absolute 80s.
All about the feel-good tunes on a Friday here on Absolute 80s. Deacon Blue then, and Real Gone Kid. And well done to you if you guessed Iggy Pop just before it from our quick lyric quiz, the lyrics to Real Wild Child. Right, on to our first Haven't Heard It Ages of the Day Today. In fact, one featured in the chart show this weekend as we relive the biggest selling hits of this month in 1983 and 1986. And from April 83 now, here's Tears for Fears and Pale Shelter.
She's also a massive hit with her thousands of social media followers, thanks to her vast repertoire of studio dancing, dog videos, and Friday night wine glasses. In the interests of transparency, I have a bit of an advantage with this one. I've known Sarah since we were both in our early 20s, having met at a radio station we both worked at. No spoilers, but to say I'm proud of where she's gone, having known where she was at the time that I met her, would be an understatement. But it hasn't been all showbiz dinners and adoration for her. She's had something of a massive mirror moment. And in my view, it's made her what she is today. A headstrong and inspirational beacon for women in the media. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Before we dive into that, let's find out more about where she is today.
In Your Mirror. I think in order to sustain a career in this kind of industry, you have to stay true to yourself. I think if you are permanently putting on an act, that's going to show at some time. You know, it's just too exhausting. That said, obviously, you know, when you go on air, and you'll know this, you amp up aspects of your personality, I would say. And certainly on days when perhaps you're not feeling great because it's day 364 of lockdown and you're in your spare bedroom still, you have to go on air and you have to be that bright, light, friendly voice that people want to hear because they're all in the same boat. You know, this last year has been bloody tough.
Simple Minds on Absolute 80s. Can't hear that without thinking of that final montage in The Breakfast Club and Judd Nelson's powerful fist pump into the air. A lot of snogging in that last scene. When I watched it again recently, I was like, wow, that's pretty graphic. By the way, if you enjoyed that, then you're going to love our Bank Holiday Monday treats from 10 a.m. Every single song is a 80s movie soundtrack favourite. And we're taking requests for this, by the way, so get in touch. You can suggest a song at Absolute 80s on Twitter, post it on our Facebook page, or get involved via the Absolute Radio mobile app. Always lovely to hear from you. Toto on the way as we keep the classics coming with Bonnie Tyler on Next. Absolute.
It's been unbearable at times for so many people. So to go on air when maybe you've not had the greatest day, you know, there have been times over the last year where very early on the first lockdown, my mum was taken into hospital. I was so worried about her and I had to go on air that day and be like, hey, everyone, you know, I hope you're doing okay. And I wasn't doing okay. But something I've learned in the last 20 years is that in itself can be quite a good therapy. It can be quite therapeutic for you to go on air and have to sound light and bright because eventually you start feeling better. It's almost like going out and taking a long walk or just breathing, sitting there and kind of concentrating on your breathing or doing something that just lifts you out of that gloom. And for me, you know, that's been radio for the longest time. And hopefully for people listening, that's been radio. I find music incredibly therapeutic. You know, I've got a playlist on my phone, which I think is just feel good music. And I play that whenever I'm, you know, having an off day. It lifts me. Music has always done that. Music, I think more than anything else as well, it's just so emotive. It can take you back to a really good time, a really good holiday, a really good moment in your life, and you're instantly transported back there. But I think ultimately people who have listened to me over the last however long pretty much know who I am. I don't think I put on an act. I try and stay true to myself. I'm probably a bit more reserved than people think I am. I think, you know, when you present this kind of all singing, all dancing, social media personality and on air as well, you know, if I'm just out and about with my dogs, I'm just out and about with my dogs. I'm not going to be, you know, doing a dance routine along the Grand Union Canal as I walk my dogs. That's not me. But, you know, I think we're all different people on different days at different times. But I think the core of me is the me that you hear on air. And I think any other route would just be too exhausting for the reasons I've said. I have met people like that, that said, where their on-air personalities are quite different to their off-air personalities. When I first got into radio, in fact, there was a guy who really was that kind of all singing, all dancing person on air. And then as soon as we stepped away from the microphone, he'd be in the corner of the pub kind of staring into his pint. And I'd be like, where has that guy gone? You know, it's almost like he'd used up all his energy in the studio. And so then he was just this sort of quite introvert character off air. I guess that's just the way he was and the way he dealt with it. But for me, I think if you hear me on the radio, you're hearing me.
Before she became the Sarah champion that all of her listeners and social media fans know today, she endured something that would make most people probably want to just give up and do something else. Anything else.
In Your Mirror with Neil Velio.
The whole point of this show is about overcoming the objects in your way so that you can look at them in the rearview mirror. And you got quite a few of those, I think. The start of your career, you did face quite a little bit of, should we say a little bit of abrasion from some of your superiors?
Yeah, I mean, let's just call it what it was and say outright bullying and sexism. We could say that now. You know, I think what you said earlier about sort of becoming more authentic as you get older is a bit more about sort of having the strength almost to call that behavior out now. I think certainly, you know, in the current climate of women feeling a bit more empowered, we can do that. Yeah, I had a, you know, rant. If I think of some of the things that were said, some of the behavior, it was so desperately inappropriate. I suppose it's one of those moments where you go, actually, if that hadn't have happened, then the next path in my life wouldn't have opened up. So I'm weirdly grateful for it. At the time, it was crushing. And if you're talking about review, I almost kind of, yeah, well, I wish I could go back to that sort of early 20-year-old crying in the garden because her boss who'd been on a relentless bullying and awful campaign when I was trying to start out in radio. And then had sort of the final nail in the coffin was that he called me up and said, just to let you know, you'll never make it in radio because you've got such an attitude problem. It was after like this relentless sort of bullying and sexist campaign anyway. And I remember sitting in my parents' garden and I felt at an all-time low in terms of, well, I've blown it. You know, I thought I'd had this big break come my way because it was, you know, some pretty well-known names in the business who were behind the radio station. And I thought, well, that's it now. What do I do? And so this version of me wants to go back to that version of me in the garden and literally just give her a hug and say, do you know what? This is the best thing that's ever happened to you. Because from that point, I took an avenue that meant I got my own show as opposed to what I was doing at that radio station, which was essentially kind of sort of almost secretarial duties and then reading the news at the weekend. So yeah, a pivotal moment, a quite dark moment, but a pivotal moment of now realizing that that was the best thing that could have happened. So it's a good life lesson, even when something dreadful happens to you and a really bad experience, and it kind of makes you question everything, makes you question if you're on the right path. Just keep going. It's such a lovely thing to look back and go, well, if that hadn't happened, you wouldn't have ended up where you were. And actually, I think about 3 years later, when I was hosting my own Drive Time show, the guy who'd called me up and told me I'd never get anywhere in radio emailed me to say, just so you know, I always had a soft spot for you. And I thought, well, that was a really peculiar way of showing it, mate. And I don't think I even dignified it with a response. But yeah, I mean, you know, some years later, I've got a show that I love on the station that I was wanting to work for. So up yours.
That is the award submission audio for 2022 British Podcasting Awards right there. Great. Thanks, Sarah.
You're welcome. You are welcome.
Love it. The obstacles, obviously, they were a big part of your formative years. And as you say, in a weird, really messed up way, they are something that we should be grateful for, because they've put you on the map in terms of where you are now in your career. Kick up the ass almost in a weird way to sort of go, you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to get there and F these people.
I think there's an awful lot to be said for starting kind of on the bottom rung of the ladder as well and working your way up. I think when you've, you know, got up at 5 a.m. to answer calls for the local BBC radio station and you have an appreciation for radio at every level, then once you do get a level of success, then I think you appreciate it all the more, as opposed to somebody who's just been brought in because they've been on a reality TV show or whatever. You know, I think there's a lot to be said for learning your craft, and I think that can be applied to a million different things.
People think radio is such an easy thing to do, and I know firsthand that it's not. You've got a lot of work to do before you even get on the air. There's prep work involved, there's psychological work involved, like the mental health aspect of it, for one. And one of the things a lot of people don't realize, one of the biggest challenges of any kind of content creation, is that overcoming the bullcrap from people that hide behind social media accounts. You're brilliantly impressive in the way that you handle it now. I've seen some of your responses. There was a very recent one I saw, which I chuckled and I felt proud of you, because some idiot had said about, yeah, okay, great dress, now drop the DMs. Essentially saying that's not ladylike and you should wear high heels because you're a chick. And I love the way that you handled it. But, you know, that's quite a common thing for you. How do you handle it? Because, I mean, I know firsthand, it makes me feel when I read that sort of stuff aimed at me, but you just seem to sort of breeze through it.
Oh, I wish that was true. I think, and actually, it's an interesting time to talk about it for me, because I'm sort of, on the one hand, like I said, kind of in the current climate of calling people out over stuff, I do call people out over certain things. But honestly, Neil, if I was to do it on a daily basis, I'd be doing it on a daily basis, because that's the thing. I think it's 10 times worse for women on social media, particularly women in the public eye in any way, shape or form. The criticisms, the objectification, it is absolutely endless and it's exhausting. And it comes from, you know, I keep coming back to the current climate because I think it's sort of really important. But, you know, not so long ago, we were talking about how it's something like it's 98% of women have been sexually harassed in some way, shape or form, you know. Whether that's walking down the street at 15 years old and having, you know, men shout unacceptable things at you, or, you know, offensive things, or, you know, sexually objectifying you. So now we're getting that online on a daily basis, hourly basis sometimes. I don't ask for opinions anyway when I just put up that I've got a new dress and I was excited to be wearing it out to an actual social occasion for the first time, because it's, you know, the first weekend after lockdown. So that's all it was. And yeah, he sort of said, well, this, yeah, lovely dress, but drop the boots and wear something ladylike. Thanks. And I replied, this lady will wear whatever this lady likes. Thanks.
Yes.
well, yeah. And you know, it's just such a peculiar thing that why is what I wear in any way important? But that's something that's leveled at women all the time. You know, you see on the red carpet, who are you wearing today? And there's a lovely bit where I think with Cate Blanchett.
Okay, you look fabulous. Let's start with the dress. Who are you wearing tonight?
Who am I wearing?
Yes,
Givenchy. Do you do that to the guys?
Yes, we do.
A thing that's just, it just happens. What do you think is going to happen down there that is so fascinating? I'm going to look.
Yeah, Mr. Glam.
You know, there'll be female politicians who are implementing policy who will, and the article will be about the shoes they're wearing. It is exhausting. So that one was quite a fun one for me to call out, just because that kind of thing does go on all the time. It's relatively harmless. You know, there are certain things I will call out. For example, there was a guy not so long ago who tweeted to say, is at Sarah Champion more than just a big pair of tits? And my initial reaction was almost to laugh, because it sounded to me a little bit like that Ricky Gervais quote from The Office where he's talking about Dolly Parton and he quotes one of her songs and says how inspirational it is and then says, and people say she's just a big pair of tits. But however he'd worded it wasn't quite enough to make me think it was in any way a reference to The Office or Dolly, but he was just, you know, just being insulting for the sake of it, essentially. And it's sort of a peculiar thing to aim at me specifically, having not made, you know, there are people who make a living out of their looks. I have no problem with that whatsoever. That's not me. Most of my living is made behind a microphone in a radio studio. So it's, but again, it comes back to that objectification thing whereby, newsflash, I'm a woman and I have breasts. I can't help that any more than you can help having a nose, and I can't help the size of that any more than I can help, you can help having a big nose, right? But if, imagine if every time you posted something, someone felt the need to go, big nose, you'd be like, okay, yeah, I mean, sure, but that kind of wasn't the point of the post. And it's sort of the least interesting thing for me about the post. But so yeah, to sort of absolutely bring me down to, is Sarah Champion more than a big pair of tits or whatever? So obviously that stings, right? But then I looked at his profile photo and it was him with his family, with his wife and his young daughter and his son. So I pulled him up on it and I said, hi, just so you know, this isn't an appropriate way to speak to women you've never met online. And I think I made a reference to, you know, it looks like you have a lovely family there. Just try and be better. And the thing when you obviously quote somebody is that obviously your followers see the original tweet, which was offensive. And then there's a bit of a pile on that person, which I always have a slight issue with, because I think, oh, what if he, you know, what if he's having an off day and he's just tweeting? But then I think, no, because it's not okay to talk to people like that. It's not okay. And if I, with a little bit of profile and with a certain amount of followers, can draw attention to the fact that that isn't okay and please be better, then I'm going to at this point, because it happens, like I said, so much. It's a daily thing. I think women in the media get it so much worse. There's been an occasion this weekend gone where a sports reporter, a female sports reporter, has made the exact same mistake on air that a male sports reporter made. The male sports reporter got, ha ha, that's so funny that he didn't see the red card. She just gets non-stop abuse about it. You know, there are a few people who go, oh, it's so funny. And she even referenced him. But as a female sports reporter, a female football reporter, she has to prove herself 10 times more than any male would have to in that role, okay? And for her to wake up every day and see a pile on social media about how she's an effing woman and shouldn't be in the job and all that sort of stuff, when she has had to prove herself so hard to get to where she is. And she tweeted very honestly that her little boy came up and said, why are you crying? That's so upsetting for any mother to have her child, you know, to be affected to that extent, first of all, that she couldn't hide it. And she made the valid point, which is the point I will always make. There will be so many people that say to you, just block and move on, or mute is better actually, because then you haven't given them the satisfaction of knowing that they're blocked. But you've read that, you've felt that, it's upset you. You know, I saw the whole thing play out, and I tweeted as well, and I said, look, I really feel your frustration on this. Keep fighting the good fight and don't let the bastards get you down, because I know I've been there. You just heard my dog bark in the background. One of the very first insults I got years and years ago when I very first started out in radio was, I hope your dog dies. Because I put together a video of me and my dog as part of a campaign that I'd been asked to do to win a trip to California. People thought that I was entering the contest, which I wasn't allowed to do because I work for the radio station. That's against the rules. I'd been asked to do it. I put together this cute video of my dog and me to this song, California Dreaming. And as I played my harmonica, he did this little howling thing. I thought, that's adorable. What can people possibly have a problem with that? And it was quite early days of social media. So when people started to pile on, I made the mistake of kind of going, hey guys, sorry, just so you know, I can't enter this competition, because that's obviously where the bad feeling was coming from. But, you know, good luck to the rest of you. And then somebody wrote, I hope your dog dies. It upset me so much. You know how much I love animals. Anyone wishing any ill on any animal, but certainly, you know, my dog, it upset me so much. And I asked my bosses to take the whole video down. People had written actually much worse things than that, that I won't go into, but it affects you so much, so badly. And, you know, we're in this sort of culture of be kind, but people forget it. On a daily basis, people forget to be kind. They forget that there is a human being who, yes, they're on TV, or yeah, they're, you know, behind a radio mic, but they're just as human as you are. And that shit hurts. It really hurts. It's so upsetting to read. You don't want the bastards to get you down, but they do. They do. There are times I've thought of coming off social media. I'm sure every single woman has at some point, because some comment has cut them to the core and has ruined their day or their week. We know there have been dreadful consequences of social media bullying and trolls, and yet it still goes on a daily basis. So let's all just try and be better, be kinder. I think I started this by saying, am I doing the right thing by responding and by calling people out? Because am I then just sinking to their level? Am I then just giving them the platforms? I think there are certain trolls who will say something deliberate to try and bait you. And the advice has always been, don't feed the trolls, hasn't it? Don't give them the airspace. But it's really hard sometimes. And I would say that I ignore 99% of the negative comments. Yesterday, straight away, a nice rack. I think I pulled someone up on that and said, just so you know, this isn't a compliment, because he'd argued, it's a compliment. Just so you know, it's not, I think 99% of women would find it offensive. And I like literally use it as not, just said, look, just so you know, most women find that offensive terminology. You know, if you genuinely thought that was a compliment, fine, I will enter into a discussion with you whereby I say it's not. And if I put a video up of me and my, at the time, 11-year-old niece doing a silly dance routine that was one that was doing the rounds on TikTok, and you're commenting constantly on my rack with my 11-year-old niece also in the video, that is deeply offensive, deeply wrong. Be better. She is my inspiration for calling these people out. I don't want her to grow up in a world where she constantly feels objectified. It's tricky, isn't it? In that video, I wasn't wearing anything provocative. I was wearing a t-shirt and jeans, but I shouldn't have to even have that, you know, that shouldn't be part of it either. It's the equivalent of being shouted at in the street, you know, when and we're told to keep our heads down. And we do, because if a van load of men are shouting at you in the street and you're on your own, you are so deeply threatened by that, that of course you keep your head down. On social media, if I can call someone out about their inappropriate behavior and there's no immediate physical threat to me, I think sometimes I'll do that and say, just try and be better, because I've got my niece in my sights all the time. I'm trying to pave the way so that we can all agree that is no longer, never has been, but isn't acceptable behavior. When I turn it around and think about the whole be kind thing, if someone is in a bad place and that's why they're acting in that way, then maybe you need to rise above it. I had an instance when I first started out at Virgin where I was given a really high profile slot to do. And it was only covering during the week, but I was given it to cover for sort of 2 weeks. And I think maybe on the first day, I just got a load of abuse text to the studio, because this is kind of before Twitter was so prolific anyway. Load of abuse text to the studio, capital letters, how effing shit I was, this, that, and the other. And that's tough, because then you have to go on air and do a link. And someone's just told you you're so effing shit. And so I carried on, and it happened the next day, and it happened the day after that, and it happened the day after that. And to the point that I was sort of dreading even looking at the text. But of course you have to, and that's sort of how social media works as well, because out of 99% of lovely comments that you're then going to use on air, or not even, you know, interaction that's useful because it's about the topic you're talking about, and you know, you want to shout out to someone who's listening in the car or while they're having the barbecue and all that stuff. So you feel like you have to be part of it. But sometimes I liken it to when I used to work in a paper shop, and you could have 50 lovely customers, and you could have one that comes in and just shouts at you because you haven't got the right greetings cards for their wife. And clearly that's your fault as a 15-year-old schoolgirl behind the till. Clearly you have some say in the cards. And that would ruin your day, right? So it's that. It's the exact same philosophy. You can have 50 lovely texts and emails, and then one telling you you're a shit DJ or whatever the insult is. And that's the one that affects you. And that's the one that affects you as you go into that link, and you have to try and shake it off. And I think on the second week of the cover, I don't know what I'd done to win this person over, but the abuse became less, to the point that it became an apology. And I, again, kind of coming back to that thing of just looking down in the street, if someone's shouting at you, my philosophy was not to interact with people that were yelling abuse at me. So I hadn't. But I got an apology, I think on maybe day 10, saying, I'm sorry, I've sent you some, I don't know if they're admitting that they were, you know, insulting or inappropriate or whatever, but I'm sorry for the text I've sent this week. I've been in a really bad place. My drinking has got out of hand. You know, and this is 11 a.m. So I'm sorry. And it's like, okay, it's lovely to hear that. Not lovely to hear that. I'm sorry that person's in a bad place. But I think maybe that's worth remembering. When you get that kind of abuse, it's very rarely coming from someone who's in a good place. So while I will call certain people out on certain behaviors, and I'll go back to the man with the lovely family in the photo just to say, it's not okay for you to behave like this with women that you've never met online. It's not okay. Try and be better for that lovely daughter of yours, you know, which was the subtext of what I said. You know, for other people, I'll just let it go, because you don't really know what's going on with someone's mental health. We're all deeply fragile, certainly at the moment. I suppose the overriding thing is just be kind, be better. You might feel angry in that moment for whatever reason. Please just try and remember that you're going to affect somebody's day with those horrible words. Yeah, let's just all try and be a bit kinder to each other and a bit better.
In Your Mirror with Neil Velio.
The beauty of our relationship is that I've known you from the very beginning of your career, and I've had the joy of knowing you and watching you grow as a person. I think what's really interesting about you, as opposed to some characters in our beloved industry, of which I'm no longer a part of, is that you've actually become more authentic as you've gone on. I mean, when you and I started out, we were working mostly at pop radio stations, and I've always known you've been a bit of a rock chick. I remember, you know, when we've done things like flat sharing, or, you know, we've gone out for nights out, and then you've put the CDs on in the evening, you know, to chill out. And it's always been like the rock music. You put on the greatest hits of the Chili Peppers and the Foo Fighters and stuff like that. And the fact that you've now ended up working on a radio station where that is a big part of it is really, it's testament to your character and your authenticity, actually. I mean, did you always know that you were going to end up at Absolute Radio?
I knew I wanted to work at One Golden Square. I knew I wanted to work at the radio station that I had listened to and had given me that love of radio, which back in the day was probably, if I'm being honest, would probably have been Chris Evans' breakfast show on Virgin. That was the kind of hearing radio for the first time, and the real magic of it, the real camaraderie of that team.
It's 22 minutes past 8. John, you know when people say, when somebody says, I'm bored, and they say, oh, no, you're not bored, you're boring. Do you agree with that?
No. I've never heard that expression.
You know, when you say, when somebody says, you know,
oh, I'm bored.
You say, no, no, you're not bored. You're boring. Only boring people get bored.
I've never heard that.
Would you agree with that or not, though?
Well,
do you get bored?
Do I get bored? Sometimes I get a bit bored, yeah.
Do you get bored or do you get fed up? See, it's different.
Yeah, there is a big difference, yeah.
It just sounded like so much fun. It sounded like listening to a bunch of mates who you wanted to be a part of, but they weren't speaking like, they weren't doing the sort of commercial radio, hey, this is me and I'm so smooth and I talk in a slightly weird transatlantic accent, but I'm just going to say, this is the record. You know, they sounded like your mates down the pub. They sounded like they were just chatting. You were part of it. So when I listened to that show, that was kind of a bit of a light bulb moment for me of going, that's what I wanted. That sounds like a lot of fun. I would love to do that. And I'd sort of started out in radio anyway at that point, I suppose. Would that have been around when I was working a local BBC radio station, just answering the phones, which was my very first kind of introduction to radio, getting up at 5 a.m., my dad driving me to go and answer the phones for the gardening program. But I know an awful lot about poinsettias. So around Christmas time, I'm your girl. I remember building up from that point, you know, getting my first little demo together, getting a little show on a station called Oxygen, which is a sort of student radio, but was bought out by a company and became Fusion Radio. Reading the news there, but realizing that that wasn't quite the right fit for me. So badgering them with this little demo tape that I'd put together from the local BBC radio station where I'd go in and just do bits with the on-air presenter. And, you know, they gave me a shot. They gave me a chance. And so from there, I went to another local radio station called Heartbeats in Hertfordshire, which was in the old pump house of Nebworth House. Had the best time there, launched that radio station, literally, you know, put all the music on, all the starts and ends, all the fades if it faded and all the E's if it ended and the sort of timer up to when you started talking so you didn't talk over the lyrics. So I had a real sense of loyalty to that station, but I knew, you know, broadcasting to five towns in Hertfordshire probably wasn't going to maybe get me into Virgin Radio. So I then went to a station called Horizon in Milton Keynes, where probably one of the greatest bosses I've ever had, Trevor Marshall, sat me down on my first day and said, where do you want to be? And I was like, okay, is this a trick question? Because I've just got the job here, but fine, I'd love to be at Virgin Radio. And he looked me dead in the eye and said, let's get you there. I was like, wow, that's like a really inspiring speech. I feel like, yeah, I can do this now. And I had, you know, my own drive time show, which I'd fought really hard for. I'd been pushed to sort of be the sideline girl at breakfast, you know, reading the travel or reading the bits of news and just kind of laughing at all the guys' jokes, you know, that old sort of cliched breakfast radio show. But I thought, no, Trevor believes in me. He thinks I can do this. And then, of course, when I did get to Virgin Radio and I had my leaving do at Milton Keynes FM 103 Horizon, I said, Trevor, do you know what? This is all because of you. This is all because you believed in me and you said, let's get you there. And he looked me in the eye and said, yeah, but I didn't think you'd do it. Oh, well, it worked anyway. I think he was joking. I've seen him at lots of awards since, but there you go. That inspirational speech that he clearly thought, she's never going to get to Virgin Radio. Well, there you go. I did it.
In Your Mirror with Neil Velio.
Sarah overcame the oppression and misogynism that plagued the industry and still plagues the media overall today. She's now a spokesperson for numerous dog charities and campaigns and continues to post subliminal messages to the BBC to get picked for Strictly. But where does she see herself in 10 years? And will it be in radio?
In 10 years' time, I'd like to think that I am just doing the things that make me happy. It's served me fairly well so far. I think having confidence to do the things that genuinely bring you joy, because life is short. And if you can do things that bring you joy daily, even if that's, you know, walking the dogs, spending time with the dogs, I know the things that make me feel happy. I know the things that make me feel alive. Everyone does. If you think about something that you do where you're in the moment because you are loving it, it could be, you know, it could be playing football, it could be cooking, whatever it is for you, do more of that. Do more of what makes you happy. I know that sounds like a sort of shitty bumper sticker, but it's true. So for me, I know the things that make me feel alive, I love doing, I love spending time with my friends, I love spending time with my family. I love spending time with the dogs. I've genuinely thought about starting a dog business because, you know, dog walking, pet sitting, that kind of thing. I think I will end up doing that at some point because dogs bring me joy. There's this book called Ikigai. I don't know if you know about it. It's sort of based loosely on an island off of Japan where the rate of living is most people make it to 110 or something. And so they sort of went to study these people to find out what it is that they're doing right, that keeps them happy and keeps them alive. And there's this kind of Venn diagram of what makes you happy or what brings you joy, what's kind of useful to the community, and then maybe what you can monetize in the middle. So when I've done that for myself, I've gone, well, dogs, people need dog walkers and you can monetize it. So like genuinely, I think at some point that's what I will end up doing and I'll be very happy at 65 covered in dogs or whatever I am. I know that acting makes me happy. I know that doing a local theatre show, a local theatre run where you've rehearsed for 4 or 5 months and you just do the briefest of runs brings me more joy than doing a day on a film set where millions of people see it, because I love the craft. I love learning lines. I love performing to audiences. So I know that over the next 10 years, I want to do more of that because it makes me happy. It brings me joy and it makes me feel alive. And that's my ikigai, I feel like. It's getting lost in that moment, you know. You're not thinking about anything else. You're just thinking about the craft, about the other people on stage, about the audience. And while you get so much more recognition for doing half a day's work on set of some TV show that's, you know, a BBC show or whatever, and don't get me wrong, I love doing that too. But for me, the real joy of it is the craft and is the time that you can spend doing those things. So I know that in 10 years' time, okay, I might not be getting the BBC call-ups so much, but I will be doing local theatre, community theatre or something, because that's what brings me joy.
Sarah has looked in the mirror and found her life's purpose, entertaining listeners and challenging those online idiots who would seek to degrade and destroy others on social media.
Sarah, have you had a nice time?
A lovely time, and I'd like to go home now.
Well, with that ringing endorsement, that's about it. Goodbye from Isle of Wight. I've been Pete Donaldson.
And I've been Sarah Champion.
Have a great week. Here's Chris Martin.
Some would call Sarah a radio presenter. I'd say she's probably more of an influencer. And unlike others who carry that largely misused job description, she's a positive one. Until the next episode.
Luckily, the people from The Chase called me and said I was going to be on just before the people from Pointless did.
Have you looked in your mirror yet? Who's looking back at you? And what was their mirror moment? If you've enjoyed this episode, please do click the follow button on your favorite listening app and leave in your mirror a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.
In Your Mirror is a Podnose podcasting network show.